This is Open Lines Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we are back in the Open Mind studio. As those of you who are watching the video can tell, remember, you can watch us, besides just hearing us, live or on archive at openminds.tv. So it looks like we got a few chatters, and I should start the Blog Talk chat. Sorry, Blog Talkers. There you go. Chat with us. Remember, if you have any questions, you can go to the chat. You can ask your questions. We'll get them in there, and you're going to want to ask lots of questions today because we have, hopefully, an incredible guest. We haven't had to been able to get a hold of him, unfortunately, so hopefully we'll get him on the line in the next few minutes. But George Filer, he was an Air Force pilot and intelligence officer, and he has had some extraordinary UFO encounters, including, believe it or not, a crazy encounter with extraterrestrials that we'll be talking about. He's a really great guy. Many of you who are in this field know him by Filer's Files, because he was so interested by everything that happened to him that he started sending out emails with news and sightings and information. He's also a MUFON director for the Northeast. So I'm really excited to talk to him. He's got a great sense of humor, a funny guy, and maybe I shouldn't talk him up too much just in case he doesn't make it and we have to have Antonio again. But Antonio is wonderful, so it'll still be a great show, and you'll still want to ask lots of questions. So go check out the chat, openminds.tv. Right now, you'll notice that we're at our new time, 7 p.m. We're going to be going a full hour and a half without commercials with just me and Jason and the guest and a lot of news and info. So this is going to be really awesome. This is by request. Lots of listeners asking that we go to this format. So we said, okay, quit your whining. We'll go back. Just kidding. But radio was a lot of fun, but it is a lot of fun to get, because as you know, we always get cut off, can't get out to all the details. And I want to remind everyone again that the UFO Congress, we're going to be putting that on here in the Phoenix metro area. And that will be February 23rd to the 27th. We're already taking registration. You're going to want to get in early because, really, there are a limited number of rooms available at the hotel. So you're going to want to get in. We've bought out the entire hotel, so it's going to be just UFO junkies. So you want to get in early. Remember, you could go to UFOCongress.com or OpenMinds.tv to register. So register early. And at UFOCongress.com, we've also got the majority of the speakers. So we are way ahead of the game. We really have our stuff together like nobody's business. And we've got most of the guests already listed out. Lots of exciting guests. I'm excited to see every one of them. I'm excited to see George Filer, who we're going to have as a guest. And I'd be really excited if he would, we could get a hold of him here so we can have him on our show as planned. But anyway, what we usually talk about this time is news. However, Jason really frustrated me this week, and I fired him. Just kidding. We're still going to talk about news. OpenMinds.tv, practically daily we have news headlines up, and these are conventional headlines where, you know, news agencies are talking about UFOs, and UFOs are in the news a lot. And Jason McClellan, our news correspondent, is here, sitting right next to me instead of across the board like before, to tell us all about the news. Jason, how are you?
I'm excellent, my friend. How are you?
That's magic. He's telepathically doing this too. You notice he doesn't need a microphone. He's even more talented than I am.
Your brain is a microphone. Hello, world. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, August 30th, 2010. Author Leslie Keene made her appearance on the Colbert Report last week to talk about her book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. On the show, she mentioned the 2006 Chicago O'Hare UFO incident, where a UFO was seen hovering above the airport and then shot straight up out of sight. Since Keene's mentioning of this on national television, there's been renewed interest in the incident, and Google even noticed a spike in search traffic from people seeking information about the O'Hare UFO incident.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, she mentioned that. What I thought was interesting is she mentions on the show that that was like the number one website hit, you know, way back then for the Chicago Tribune. And then they came out and said it's still right. The number one news story they've ever had. And then it also, because it gets all this regeneration, became, yeah, one of their top stories last week.
And still with this story from 2006, there's still no explanation for what happened at Chicago O'Hare.
Well, that's kind of cool, too, because John Hilkovich, the guy who did the story, the journalist, he pursued this. He found what we usually find is that the FAA and the government were kind of stonewalling him and not giving him information. It was an eye-opening experience for him, and he hasn't backed down. I was half expecting him to say, oh, you know, maybe it was this or that. But he hasn't backed down, and he still sticks to his guns that he's never got a satisfactory answer, that the FAA and that United Airlines gave him the runaround. So, yeah, like you said, it's still an unknown.
This is also an interesting story, too, because it's one of those cases where there were several witnesses, and these witnesses were pilots. They were U.S. Air employees and ground crew who worked for the airport.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a bunch of passengers on an airplane pointing and saying, look, something in the sky.
Yeah.
These are people who work there every single day.
Yep, people who work there. And supposedly there were possibly pictures, although none, there's been rumors of some coming to light, but none have really shown up.
Right. Here's an interesting statistic, at least I found it interesting. 40% of the Brits claim to have either seen a ghost or a UFO. That's according to a recent survey of 3,000 British people. And a surprising 1 in 5 think that aliens could be living among us.
Really? I didn't notice the 1 in 5.
One in five.
Holy moly, those Brits. That's why they're UFO crazy out there. So the question is it a result of them just being more interested in all of this? Or is it because their government's been coming out with more information that they're a little more educated? And the funny thing is that would show that face value, the purpose of the government releasing the UFO files was to show that there's nothing to it, but it's not having that effect. It doesn't seem people are thinking, wow, there's something more to this than what they are been telling us.
I thought the numbers were surprising, and I think it's really cool, and it's probably right on. But I do have to point out that possibly the people who did the survey were biased because they were doing the survey for an upcoming movie.
Oh, really?
One of those many movies coming out about extraterrestrials and UFOs. I believe this one was the I Am Number 4.
Yeah. A lot of them coming out next year.
Some this year as well, later this year.
Really? Which one's later this year? Do you remember? I'm
kind
of excited.
That would be the
Battle LA or
Skyline? Skyline.
But now, yeah.
That's supposed to come out in November, but okay. Battle Los Angeles is suing them.
Right. So they might be postponed.
It's possible it will not come out this year. But I believe Skyline is scheduled for a November release.
Gotcha.
Wang Zichao is in the news again. The Chinese researcher and planetary astronomer from the Purple Mountain Observatory of the Chinese Academy of Sciences stated last week that he believes extraterrestrials do exist, and they have the ability to travel to Earth. He does not share Stephen Hawking's opinion, however, that if extraterrestrials come to Earth, they will destroy humanity. Rather, Sichao feels that it's too early to jump to that conclusion. He believes that if extraterrestrials we consider end up being friendly, then we can cooperate with them and give them a positive view of humans. But if they aren't friendly, Sichao thinks we could defend ourselves and defeat the attacking extraterrestrials by exploiting their weaknesses. But it'd probably take a while to figure out what their weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm. Well, he probably feels that way because he's, they've got all those kung fu guys over there to protect them. we've got a lot of kung fu here. So maybe we would. It's interesting. He's in the news so much, this guy. And what is more interesting and kind of sad is all the people, somehow Wang Sichao, who's one astronomer in China, represents the whole entire country, because now you have all these stories that China is saying this and China is pro-UFO.
So many stories saying that, claiming that what this guy says represents China. China says that aliens exist.
Yeah. But this is one astronomer, people. I know it's great to hear somebody talking about this, but he does not represent the entire Chinese government.
At least I don't think he does.
Be exciting if he does.
We need to get a hold of him.
Yeah, they must have some impressive weapons he knows about then, too.
That's a cool observatory they have there, though.
Mm-hmm.
Purple Mountain does a lot, and yeah, he's been in the news every week now.
Yeah. Well, and you've been researching Purple Mountain Observatory, and you said you didn't find him listed in their staff, though?
I looked at their staff, and I didn't see him on the website. So I wonder if he's fictitious.
Yeah. People's Daily has just created this person.
It looks like the city of Roswell, New Mexico, is standing behind its annual UFO festival. There were concerns earlier this year that the city would no longer fund the festival because it wasn't mentioned in the preliminary budget. But on Wednesday, the city approved funding for the festival in the amount of $150,000. The city council wanted to reevaluate whether the money was being spent wisely or not. Now that the money has been approved, council members say they will be watching it like hawks.
Mm-hmm. So this unfortunate situation, you know how this rolled out, which was really sad, is that they say that they're going to revisit the budget before the event starts. So people got scared. The major headliner, which would have brought people from around, probably tens of thousands of people from around the world, Billy Ray Cyrus, pulled out. The most famous, what is that haircut called with the...
The mullet.
The most famous mullet. No, people love that guy. And he pulled out because of these budgetary problems. And then they end up approving the same budget that they've had anyway. So just bad timing. They shouldn't have said anything after the event. And now, as we see, they never had to say anything anyway.
They were probably hoping that he would pull out and replace with his daughter.
Yeah. Hannah Montana?
Hannah Montana.
I still know her as Hannah Montana. That's what my niece used to watch and she liked. So.
My wife saw that on TV and couldn't figure out for years that Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus were actually different people.
What do you mean?
Sorry, Alejandro, didn't mean to burst your bubble. This is a really cool story from last week. A UFO was captured on a motion-activated camera in Fort Worth, Texas last week. The camera, used by hunters to spot deer, photographed an object in the sky that has a string of several symmetrical lights. According to photo timestamps, the object hovered in the sky for nearly 2 hours.
Yep, so this has made a lot of news. It was on LA Times. You know, we posted it, but since then it's, you know, as soon as we post it, then everybody picks it up. But it's been on major news all over the place. And I haven't seen, I don't know if you have in any of these stories, any explanation for what it might be.
No explanation. You know, the person who owns the camera said that, you know, they ruled out things like vehicles because there are no roads in the area. It's very secluded. Also, cell antennas, there aren't any. It's just a very secluded area. There's nothing back there that could explain these lights.
Hmm.
I'm not sure what it is. At first, I thought it could possibly be a car, like a bus driving by or something, but this thing is sort of above the tree line.
Yeah, it's in the sky. Yeah. So I thought maybe it was what are those glowing bugs that fly around? That it could be something like that, but that area doesn't have them, I guess. But Fireflies,
there you go.
Because maybe the wing flapping creates, because bugs often have that kind of, you know, where you see...
String of light effects.
String of light kind of effects.
Right.
Very strange.
After 30 years of researching, a 49-year-old Australian ufologist has finally seen his own UFO. Eric Black of Brisbane, Australia, became fascinated with UFOs at childhood and has spent his lifetime researching them. But until recently, he had never seen a UFO with his own eyes. While vacationing in Australia's Northern Territory, Black saw something that, at first, he thought was a low-flying plane. He described the object as an amber-colored, hamburger-shaped thing with black dots on the top. And he also said it was several times brighter than Venus. The UFO hovered above him for 30 seconds before it rapidly disappeared. And he was so excited by what he was seeing that he forgot to take a picture, even though he had his camera right there with him.
Yeah, well, sometimes you get really excited.
I completely understand the feeling because I've had it happen to me.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's funny because the first UFO sighting I had, and I was an investigator for several years by now, and I, you know, you just stand there with your jaw, you know, you're just trying to figure out what you're looking at. And this other lady who had seen UFOs before, she was behind me. And all of a sudden I hear from her way over here to my right, and she's like, well, it looks like it's fading out, and she's got her binoculars on it. I mean, she zoomed out to her car, grabbed her binoculars, and trained them on the object. Pretty good.
I'm going to go back to a story that I skipped here, and I apologize to our director who's controlling the show. I skipped over a story, and she's going to be very angry at
me. Pictures are all mixed up.
That's right. All right. For months now, residents of Halifax have been seeing strange objects in the sky. There seems to be regular UFO activity in the UK, but Halifax and its surrounding areas have been buzzing with UFO sightings lately. A bright orange hovering ball is what many residents have described seeing recently, but one witness suspects that the silent hovering object he observed could be some sort of spy craft of earthly origin. But the majority of what people have been seeing in this area are these bright orange balls that hover with no noise and then just sort of disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And still no explanation. Some of them are almost certainly the Chinese lanterns that a lot of people see now.
Well, then how do they get from China to the UK?
Wind is powerful, my friend. The currents.
Yeah. No, right, the Chinese lanterns. We still have to do our experiment on the Chinese lanterns. But they're so popular right now. They're really cool, so I'm not surprised.
What I'm surprised by is the orange ones are the only ones that seem to be seen.
Yeah.
Or things that are blamed on Chinese lanterns. Chinese lanterns come in a variety of colors. Any color you want, you can get a Chinese lantern.
Oh, really?
You can get blue, you can get red, you can get white, you can get green. I would definitely get a blue Chinese lantern.
Yeah, blue would be cool. So now what you're saying is now all these other colored balls of light could be Chinese lanterns too.
Well, yeah, but...
Uh-oh.
But that's not what we hear. We hear these orange balls. And a lot of them, the way the movements are described...
Right.
And a lot of the movement can be explained by wind currents and things because at high altitudes, these things can move and then shift rapidly. And a lot of people don't understand that.
Right.
But, you know, some of the other movements with stopping, hovering, and then shooting straight up and then coming back and not Chinese lanterns, my friend.
Well, on the story of the guy who said he saw him beaming the lamb, his sheep, and then finding the sheep dead in the morning.
That's a Chinese lantern. That's probably defective, and they should get their money back.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's a cool story. On August 21st, a Central Valley, California family driving home called the Mutual UFO Network State Director, Jeffrey Gonzalez, to report witnessing a triangle-shaped craft making a hard landing on a mountainside outside Fresno, California. The craft supposedly attempted to take off again after crashing, but was unsuccessful. Unmarked vehicles reportedly arrived at the scene very quickly, and what appeared to be an arc welding light was seen at the crash that evening. There were scorch marks at the crash site, and Jeffrey Gonzalez was able to record these on video and will make the video available as soon as it has been processed. Some are speculating, though, that the crash object is the alleged top secret Air Force TR-3B nuclear-powered flying triangle.
Which, if you are watching our video right now, you would see a cool TR-3B, well, maybe in a minute or something, there it is, that our buddy Michael Stratt, who works with us, created, because he's done a lot of work on this. In fact, we can plug something here. Our video that we have online of Michael Stratt talking about some of this stuff on our YouTube, you can see the whole lecture for only $3. That's cheaper than buying a DVD, or we've got some clips, too. We've got stories in the magazine on this and everything, so really cool-looking vehicle. It would be, I can't wait. Of course, everybody's waiting for these pictures and these videos to see what he's got, because if you can see some Stingray type of triangular aircraft landed on the ground on this hill, that would be pretty damn cool.
Very cool. And something interesting about this TR3B that I just found out is, there's a lot of, well, of course, with any alleged top secret military craft mm-hmm. that nobody knows about, there are also rumors by people who think the government is out to fool us, which they possibly may be, that this is all just made up by the government. There's no such thing as a TR-3B. They just created it to have an explanation for all the triangle-shaped UFOs that people see.
Interesting. That could be too, I guess, huh?
You never know.
What the heck is going on with these UFOs, Jason?
That's what we're here to find out.
Right.
Alejandro, that's it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm your Open Minds news correspondent, Jason McClellan, and you've been briefed.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Now, talking about the and more part that Jason had mentioned was some of the other stories that we have up on the website this week. Some really cool ones. Pretty much our biggest scoop, news scoop, is, of course, from Antonio again, who had a rare document related to a famous sighting in Brazil, off the Trinidad Islands. And these are some photos. Hey, Jason, your mic's still on. These are some famous photos that you can see on our website. But what Antonio had was a document that was written by the guy who was involved with taking the first pictures. And it has come out that supposedly a cousin of a cousin, actually, I think it's his, maybe even his sister, a family member, claims that on his deathbed he said, "I hoaxed those things." The problem is the president and some of the others were involved with this whole incident, and there were a lot of witnesses that were actually Brazilian Navy who saw this thing. So how could he have hoaxed something that people had seen is a question. What do you do with all these other witnesses? How could it all be a hoax? This and then that and that. And you can read the details of this in the story. But still, it's kind of cool that Antonio was able to find this document. We had it translated by a coworker who speaks, I think they speak Portuguese out there. And we were able to put that online to this debate going on about these Trinidad UFO photos. Kind of exciting because it's an incredible event that took place where all of these Navy guys had seen this thing. So a lot of questions still exist, of course, when it comes to that. We just posted a story today from Michael Schrett, yet again, like we were talking about, on the UFO case files that he has been putting out. Essentially what he did is he went through some MUFON and KUFOS files, KUFOS being the Center for UFO Studies, and he is an illustrator. He creates aeroplanes and different types of devices in AutoCAD and is able to render these in 3D, and then he'll often put those overlaid on top of a scene that is similar to where the witnesses had seen the craft, and he's done that with a lot of these stories with the details behind these case files. So that's pretty cool. We've got a story on all of those movies that Jason had talked about and what's coming out there. We also have, Jason wrote a story on different tourist spots. So if you're trying to get in a vacation still here at the end of the summer, you'll be able to check that out. We also have, some people mentioned in our magazine, our last magazine, by the way, was dedicated to abductions, and we had a lot of stories there. Really, if you know nothing and if you're skeptical about the whole alien abduction thing, which I can understand, I was a big skeptic until I really went and did some field work, hands-on getting out there to know people who had claimed they were abductees and finding out that, yeah, they probably were abductees. Stan Romanek, of course, is a case that I have checked out before, and we had a story on him as well as an interview in the magazine, and the interview was kind of an excerpt of a longer interview, and we have that entire interview now up on the website. for people to check out. I know some people were asking about that because some people got their magazines before we got that up. So luckily that is up now. And then we also have some cool stories from the USSR. I say that because these were stories from before, you know, the whole breakup and before the USSR had totally crumbled. Again, this is an Antonio story, which is really cool, where he had a lot of files and a lot of cases that happened back then that he put together into. There are so many of these stories that we broke them up into two stories, but mostly this was airplane pilots with radar type situations. Lots of really cool stories and pictures of some of these people who had these experiences. So you can check that out as well. So really cool stuff there. We're working on the fifth issue already of our magazine, even though you guys haven't gotten the fourth. The fourth is going to print and will be out in probably just a few weeks, maybe 4 weeks or something like that. Not sure exactly when. But we're really excited about the fourth issue. It has to do with UFO landings. So you're going to want to go and subscribe to the magazine at openminds.tv before everybody else does and we run out of these. We mainly centered around the Rendlesham case because the Rendlesham anniversary is happening in December. And that was when, in 1980, you know, a lot of U.S. Air Force people had seen some UFOs and investigated these UFOs out in the U.K. and a base that we were leasing from the Brits, from the Royal Air Force. And it's just an incredible event. It's very well documented. A lot of official documents that have come forward with these Air Force people and their experiences, including, and even CNN ran this quite some time ago, some audio of one of the more exciting investigations around the Rendlesham Forest, where you can hear these guys out in the forest looking for this thing and getting all excited about it. So really cool case, and we've done it in a way I think that is more thorough and kind of more complete than others. Sometimes people don't include all three events. They just include, you know, two of them because the events can be very different. The third event that happened, there's possibly or at least some alleged ET type of activity there. So really exciting. We're really excited about that magazine coming up here. And we're working on the fifth right now. It's going to be more of a lot of different stories on the fifth instead of being focused just around one thing. So you'll have to check that out. And we are going to take a little bit of a small break. And when we get back from that break, hopefully we'll have George Filer. If not, we'll have someone just as interesting on the show. So stay tuned.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Fort McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respective scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abduction, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
Having been referred to as the CNN of UFOs, OpenMinds.tv is the hub for news relating to the alien UFO phenomenon. With daily updates of exclusive photos, videos, merchandise, and investigations, OpenMinds.tv is bringing UFO and extraterrestrial research to a global audience. The website features the Open Minds store stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Minds magazine. Visit OpenMinds.tv, the definitive source for UFO-related news. That's www.openminds.tv.
Are you or someone you know looking for the latest movies and publications containing information about UFOs and extraterrestrials? The Open Mind store is stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Mind magazine, the leading bi-monthly magazine that explores the UFO phenomenon. Single issues, as well as yearly subscriptions of Open Mind magazine, are available in the store for both domestic and international customers. The recently expanded DVD offering include dozens of documentaries and conference presentations by experts in the field of ufology. The ever-expanding line of products, including DVDs, books, and branded Open Minds merchandise, make the Open Minds store an online destination worth visiting frequently. Browse the store today at store.openminds.tv to see the latest editions.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
All right, welcome back. We don't have George Filer, but we got one of his good buddies, and so you're going to have to answer for George.
Yeah,
we've got Antonio, and let's do... Do you have his mic on? Antonio, say hello, hello.
Yeah, hi.
Not yet, so they'll work on that. But some of the things, let me tell the guys, some of the things we'll talk about once they get your microphone working. And that will be some of the latest stories that we have. We'll talk more in detail, which is kind of cool because I want to talk more about this, the Trinidad case. And something I forgot to mention earlier also was the French situation, because I think that's a really cool kind of dynamic, because we've talked about this. And let's start here. Let's see. I guess they got the mic working. So say something.
Okay, yeah. Is it working?
I guess according to them, huh? But the French situation, a lot of people keep talking about, oh, there are governments around the world who are talking about UFOs and pro-UFO and all of this stuff. But that really doesn't seem to be the case, in at least my opinion, and I think we share the same opinion there. The only country who is more proactive about actually investigating UFOs, not just taking reports, is France.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we could start off talking more about that. Tell me about the document that we had just recently posted.
Right. This document, which has gotten quite a bit of attention in our website, because luckily, you know, I guess most of the American ufologists don't read French, so otherwise maybe someone would have scooped us. But basically, as I explained in the article, it's not an official document, but it comes from a professional society, which is known as the 3AF, which means the Astronomical and Astronautical Association of France. So 3AF, which is a very large professional society of astronomers and aeronautical engineers and, you know, professional people, similar to groups that we have in the United States. But difference is that those groups in the United States don't do UFO committees. Actually, they used to. And if you look at the history of UFOs in the 60s, there were similar things. The AAAS Association for the Advanced
right.
Science.
Right. You know, we had, where it's a little bit off tangent, but I'll steer us back on. But right, one of the stories I did recently was on astronomers and UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And not only we had a group similar with the Astronomical Association of America, something like that,
right.
Similar, but they said they came to different conclusions than the Condon Report, which was what the Air Force used to justify closing the Blue Book
right.
investigations.
So basically what this group did in France is they created a committee back in 2008, like an official committee within their group. But even though they're not officially a part of the government, it's anybody that reads the report, which we translated, it's clear that they had excellent connections with the government, because then again, most of the people involved in this association are former pilots and former retired military people and, you know, professionals that are involved with either the government or various industrial organizations. And one of the more interesting parts of this report, and this, by the way, is only a progress report. So this is not the final document. We don't know how long it's going to take them. They don't say. They've only been in existence for a couple of years. They've put a couple of smaller documents before, but this is a progress report. So it's still sort of informal the way it's drafted. I imagine that their final report would be something more similar to Comida, which they mentioned several times. And their conclusions were basically identical to Comita. And for those who are not familiar with Comita, although I guess most of our listeners are, this was, again, not a 100% official report, but was a committee created by former members of the, mostly the armed forces and intelligence groups in France, but retired. And they created a pretty official-looking group, although they spoke as retired officers. And they released a famous report back in 1999, which again was very positive towards the existence of UFOs.
And these, both of these instances, were any, you know, still serving officers or generals mm-hmm. supportive, like vocally supportive? Did they receive any sort of support? They didn't receive any negative comments from the government, did they?
Well, the Comita report was criticized, but I don't know that it was criticized by the government. It was criticized by a lot of, by the press and
right.
by civilian, more conservative type civilian ufologists.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the criticism was because there was a little bit of confusion. A lot of people, especially in the international media and international American UFO groups, made it sound like it was an official report, which
right.
in fact it wasn't. So some of that was just a, kind of a misunderstanding.
Kind of like we talked about earlier, where Wang Zhichao
similar
represents
right.
the entire Chinese
yeah,
government.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we've had similar situations even in America when
right.
when Bruce McAfee, for instance, who is retired now, but he used to be an optical physicist who worked at the Naval Research Laboratory, Weapons Laboratory, as a civilian scientist, but obviously all his UFO reports and UFO analysis were Dr. Bruce McAfee, you know, the private scientist.
Mm-hmm.
He never pretended to be representing the Navy.
Right.
But let's say that someone in another country saw his credentials and said, oh, Navy says UFOs exist, right? It
yeah.
was McAfee's opinion. So, but there, what's interesting about this latest report is that they obviously had a lot of cooperation from the French military. Because if you remember when you posted it, that in the early part of the report, they actually list all the different agencies that they visited, and they went to all these secret military bases and met with generals, and they were shown stuff and radar. They even talk about reports that were done by some French intelligence agencies that have never been released.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen them. I mean,
right.
I've seen some, but not, there's one particular one coming from one of these directorates of French intelligence. I've never seen that report. So, and they even said at the end that they were shown stuff that they couldn't, they cannot even disclose.
Right.
So obviously they had full cooperation from French military forces, which was quite interesting. Of course, they also went to Japan, or JEPAN as it's called now, which is, that is the official investigation by the French government, by the French National Space Center, the equivalent of NASA. If you posted in our website a link to an article in the Smithsonian magazine, Air and Space, which they actually, I think it was called Department of Flying Saucers or something like that, which in fact is what you were saying before. France is really one of the few countries. Many countries have some kind of UFO department of sorts, but usually, like I can think of Uruguay, Chile, the UK used to have it through the Ministry of Defense.
And now Brazil, I guess.
Brazil. But usually these countries are always connected more to the Air Force. And the emphasis of the agency is not so much to investigate UFOs per se, but to see if there's any defense implication. In other words, you know, their job is to protect the airspace of that country, and if these things are flying around, they have to know whether they are friend or foe, basically. Presumably, we have something like that in America, too, but it's undeclared, unacknowledged, as
right.
Michael Schrad says. But in France, it's a little different. I mean, even though the military also have had, of course, some reports and some investigations going as far back as 1951, and also the agency that is charged with taking the actual reports from civilians, from the witness, from anybody, a farmer, an engineer, whoever sees a UFO, is the Gendarmerie, which is the sort of the, it's not the regular police. It would be similar to what we call state troopers here, but it belongs to the Ministry of Defense. But it is sort of a militarized, functions like a military agency, but does police functions, does the borders and, you know, counterterrorism, all kinds of things. And since at least, they've investigated cases as far back as the 50s, but at least since the 1970s, mid-70s, they've had official regulations to actually take reports from UFOs, from the public about UFOs. So it is part of their duty. If you live in France, whether you're French or immigrant or whoever, and you see a UFO, you can call the gendarmerie, and they are not supposed to laugh at you, but they send an agent.
Don't laugh.
I don't know.
People serious.
But they are supposed to take things seriously, and they, since they have obviously policemen, gendarmes all over the country, including the overseas regions of France, like the French Guiana in South America, the Reunion Island. Remember, we published an interesting article about the Michelin Man in Reunion Island. Those were investigated. That was even before the space agency had Japan. So those were just investigated by the gendarmerie. They send the agent. He interviews the witness. They elaborate a report. And then all that data goes to Japan, and which is used originally, it was used for statistical purposes. If a report is interesting enough, in other words, it looks like a solid case, then Japan follows it up and sends one of their team investigators, and then they conduct further. So France has a pretty elaborate system.
And it's an actual investigation system.
Yes.
And I think that's what people need to understand, because even when the UK did this up until like about a year ago or so, not even that yet, late last year, they were still only kind of shifting paperwork around. They were taking reports and sending them.
Just keeping a record.
Yeah.
And, both of us are friends with Nick Pope, because he became interested in the phenomenon and later became a famous ufologist, I think he went a little bit beyond his official duties and actually, tried to investigate some of these cases. Mm-hmm. But apparently some of the people that were either before or after him, it's just a bureaucratic thing. You take a report, maybe you make a couple of phone calls, make sure that it wasn't one of your jets or something like that, and that's it. It gets filed away. And as you know, the British, basically, they were saying of no defense significance.
Right.
That was sort of their mantra, because, again, if the Minister of Defense would have said, let's say, about Ben Waters or any case, this case has defense implications, then what's next, Then they have to really do a follow-up investigation and do something about it. If they say it's of no defense significance, then they can move on.
Right.
So France it really has an interesting system, and also have to keep in mind that France is a developed country. It's a major. They've had atomic weapons since the 1960s. We're not talking of a minor country, and also they're known for being a very rationalist country. They don't take things. They're not gullible particularly.
Right.
And what's interesting about both the Comita report and this later report by the AAAF is that both are saying that these objects are not secret weapons, which has elicited some comments on our website, because I guess many people do believe that most UFOs are these. And I noticed you were talking earlier about the secret triangles. And actually, Jason came up with a great theory. Maybe they don't exist. It's just a cover story.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's great about that report you're talking about, because they even give some sort of weight to the possibility of the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Yes. They say that's not proven, but that it definitely cannot be ruled out. Also, they, same thing like Comita. Remember, Comita, even on the titles, was the defense implications of the UFO phenomenon. And these were generals, top generals. One of them, General Leti, is one of the people who wrote one of the essays in Leslie Keene's recent book. And so the French seem to be saying going far beyond the other countries. They are not saying, I mean, they're not only saying this is a real phenomenon, which is sort of the easy cop-out, but saying that it's possibly extraterrestrial. They definitely cannot be ruled out, although cannot be proven as of yet. And also that it has a defense implication, because what is the implication if you have these objects flying with impunity over airspace of developed countries and, you know, and just doing basically whatever they please? And in the AAAF report, they even mention, it's an old Latin term, casus belli, which means bellicose, you know, belly from, well, from bellicose, you know, from warlike, which is basically like a almost reason for war. I mean, if you are violating someone's airspace, that is almost is an aggression, right? It's or potentially an aggression. So they even raise that subject.
So I mean, that's what I think. That's what just I think needs to be a point that needs to be made is that France is pretty much the only country out there who is really actively investigating and taking a real serious and being brave enough to say that this is a serious issue that we need to investigate.
The Japan, they're a little bit, being that as opposed to Comita or the AAAF, who are not speaking officially, whereas Monsieur Blanc, you know, Yvan Blanc, he's the current head of the Japan. He is, if he says something, you know, then he is speaking for the French government. So they're a little bit more toned down on their statements. Although Jean-Jacques Velasco, who used to be he's retired now, and he's been very outspoken over the years, but more so since he's retired. But the Japan, they stay away a little bit of talking about the national security implications, but they've always said, especially since they had such solid cases going all the way back, you know, those landing cases, like the Trans-en-Provence famous landing case, which is mentioned in this current report. That was in 1981. And another case in Nancy, known as L'Amarante, from Amaranth, from the, I guess it was that plant called Amaranth. I guess it landed. And these were small objects that landed in these fields and did all kinds of biochemical changes on the plants.
Mm-hmm. So you were saying Japan and their stance is...
That it's real. That it's real and physical. They leave it at that. They don't go the next step saying it's probably extraterrestrial or whatever. But they do say that it's a real stimuli, unexplained, since they obviously cannot explain it as either natural phenomena or man-made. So if it's, and that the most important part, I think that was the turning point for Japan, were these physical landing cases of 1980 and 1981, and they also had a couple more, but those are the two best known, because now you had a phenomenon that was actually affecting the environment. So it was not so easy to discard as, you know, as something. And they send the plants, samples. And this is, by the way, very different from crop circles. These were not geometric formations, but basically something with mass and energy had landed and affected the terrain. And the plants were sent to various laboratories of the French government, of universities, and some other government labs. And the scientists discovered all these crazy stuff, basically, like the chlorophyll of the plants was gone after the object had landed. And even more strange, and this was said by this biochemist called Bugnas, which the plants, this was in the Trans-en-Provence case, the plants were young, physiologically young, but after the incident, they became biochemically old. They aged. So how can you do, what can provoke that in nature? And that led, and this was actually an official conclusion in the final Japan report, that it was probably a propulsion, some kind of advanced propulsion, unknown advanced propulsion. So I think they're also veering in that direction, but they just have to be a little bit more careful in their final statement.
And that would be then the answer for someone who just asked about in the chat, what is France's position on UFO? Japan would essentially be making that stance, and just what you said,
right,
where they think it's a real phenomena, physical phenomena.
Physical phenomena that exists and that it affects the environment.
Right. So let's move from France, because that was some good stuff, I think. But I also wanted to get into then
the Brazilian,
Trinidad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, as you know, and this has been all over the ufological forums, what happened was that about 2 weeks ago, Fantastico, which is a very, very prime time, extremely popular TV show in Brazil.
You're supposed to say it, Fantastico.
Fantastico, yeah. It means fantastic, right? We don't need translation. Actually, I was interviewed once there, that show, but years ago, because they've covered many times UFOs. And what's interesting is normally they've been very positive towards UFOs, but mm-hmm. this last program, which was broadcast in early August, was quite negative. They basically debunked most of the Brazilian famous cases, except the one famous wave, what is known as the Night of the UFOs and Aeronautics, which happened in 1986, in which jets were scrambled all over Brazil, and the minister of the Air Force made official statements and all that. So that remained as a good case. But some of the other cases were, they took a negative spin. And but the most famous probably was this sequence of photographs known as Trinidad Island, which appears in practically every single UFO book ever published since 1958, including there, I noticed there in Leslie Keene's book too. They're a very, very famous sequence of photographs, partly even though they were taken by a civilian photographer called Almiro Barahona.
Barahona,
yeah. But they were taken on board a Brazilian Navy ship
Right. Because
it was part of the International Geophysical Year. So they had civilians, I guess, there as observers or whatever. And they were seen in this deserted island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, which belongs to Brazil. This happened on January 16, 1958. And many crew members, of course, saw the UFO, as well as people of a diving team, which Barahona was part of. And he took the sequence of six photos, of which two, I guess, didn't come very good. Four are the classics. And the case was kept quiet. After the ship docked at port, the Navy took a hold of the case and investigated it. And eventually, a dossier with the photos and some Navy conclusions reached the president of Brazil at that time, a man called Juscelino Kubitschek. And this was quite remarkable because the Navy had kept it quiet, but he was so excited, I guess, he was kind of a visionary, you know. He's the one that moved the capital of Brazil to Brasilia, or started the construction, because he said Brazil needs to move towards the interior. All the population had always been in the coast during colonial and early independence. So he was known as a visionary. He saw these photographs and said, this is too important to remain secret. And he gave them to a reporter from a newspaper called the Morning Courier, Correo de Mañana. Morning Courier. We actually published the clipping in our article. And the main front page. And after that, it became a famous, famous case. Now, Barahona was a very skilled photographer. So even from the early days, some people have always maintained that these photos must have been hoaxed. But there was no proof. Then in this Fantastico program, they interviewed this friend of Barahona, a woman who worked for an ad agency, or used to work for an ad agency, called Emilia Bitancourt. And she said that Barahona had confessed to her. We don't know when, because the interview was very short. It was basically, we'll reproduce, of course it was all in Portuguese, but we reproduced the translation. And basically she said that what Barahona did is he took two tablespoons, I guess cut them and made a saucer with them, and then took a photo using the home refrigerator as the background. And I guess then they were overimposed. She didn't say that, but I guess the implication is because obviously the pictures, you see the island and the coast, so then it would have to be a double exposure. You make
right.
And that was it. And so, of course, the skeptics say, oh, finally confession, you know, the photographer confesses, even though it's a secondhand confession. There's a niece there, too, although she wouldn't appear on camera, but according to the host of the TV show, said that the niece also had confirmed this. And that was it. So immediately there was a lot of fuss about it, and the skeptics were delighted that we have a confession. The other people said,
There were other witnesses right on the
Correct.
Ship.
Correct. Well, what I say at the end of the article I posted on our website is that even if the photos were hoaxed by Barahona, which I actually don't think so, but I remain open in the sense that he was a skilled guy, and
right.
he was known to have hoaxed other photos. We reproduced the photo that he had hoaxed in 1954, but up front, not tricking people to say this is
yeah,
a real.
Yeah, telling them
right.
this was
an experiment.
We know it is.
Right. And then there was some other hoax that supposedly he had done as a diver, but had nothing to do with UFOs. It was some safe that they claim it was an old French safe or something. So that's unrelated to UFOs. But of course, skeptics will say, well, but this is a guy that used to hoax. Perhaps. But still, nevertheless, even if the photos were hoaxed, it's still the case. That doesn't debunk the whole case. It would only debunk the photos
mm-hmm.
taken during that sighting, because it was reported that about 50 people saw it. There were other sightings. That was not even the only sighting. People saw the guy taking pictures on the
right.
on the deck of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had hoaxed them, he would have had very little time. Although one of the suspicious things that was always pointed out by people is that when he developed the film, I don't think he had a dark room, so he must have made a dark room either out of the bathroom or somewhere. But he was alone; nobody saw him develop the film. So that people because he was probably very
right.
small, he didn't want to be disturbed.
Right.
But,
so even if the pictures aren't real, the event took place where people had this sighting, and beyond that, you made another good point.
Yeah, the other good point is me being originally from Chile, and of course we went through a very tough period in Chile of Pinochet. You know, we had a military dictatorship for 17 years. Brazil had a horrible military dictatorship for years, and most South American countries had at one time or another. So I frankly, knowing, and especially you have to go back to that period, during the period of the Cold War, that was the heyday of the military dictatorships, because basically they could get away with it. The United States was so concerned about communism that they actually supported all these military dictatorships.
Right.
They sold them weapons, they trained their officers, and so on. So I find it not impossible, because of course nothing is impossible, but hard to believe that a guy would trick a UFO hoax right inside a Navy ship. And then he was interrogated by the Navy intelligence and everything, and kept the hoax going.
But you could get you're risking your life.
You could get in serious trouble. And then just kept it going forever.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people say, well, he didn't know they're going to be so famous, you know, whatever. But I think that's an important point. But the main news that we did in our story is that I found in my files this document, which was a whole description of the case, written by Barahona himself, signed by him, and with even a little drawing of his ship done in 1967, and which I believe, I'm not even 100% sure, I've had it in my files for a long time, but I probably, as I say in the article, probably came from one of my mentors, you know, which we discussed it in my first interview
mm-hmm.
here, Coleman von Kedinsky, the old Hungarian-American colonel,
mm-hmm.
because he had corresponded with Barahona, and he had good qualities, prints, which he received, I guess, from Barahona himself. Now, I thought that this document was probably known in Brazil, but apparently it wasn't. Because
yeah,
we're getting a lot of attention now from Brazilians. They're quite excited that
mm-hmm.
here's a full new document by the author of these famous photographs.
Yep.
So
we'll talk a little bit about what is in that letter after we take a break here in a minute, and then we'll also get into more subjects. Someone was saying, man, this is real nuts and bolts, so we'll start to talk about more of the controversial extraterrestrial related topics here in just a minute. We're going to take a short break so we can powder our noses, and we'll be back soon, so stay tuned. Open Minds Radio.
by Open Minds Production is in stores now. Open Minds Magazine is your look inside the fascinating world of UFO-related phenomena, including extraterrestrials, abductions, cattle mutilations, crop circles, alien implants, and more. Open Minds Magazine provides readers with current research, investigations, and news, all delivered in a stunning graphical presentation. Pick up your copy today and prepare to have your mind open. That's Open Minds Magazine, available now at Barnes & Noble, Borders, and online at openminds.tv.
Having been referred to as the CNN of UFOs, OpenMinds.tv is the hub for news relating to the alien UFO phenomenon. With daily updates of exclusive photos, videos, merchandise, and investigations, OpenMinds.tv is bringing UFO and extraterrestrial research to a global audience. The website features the Open Minds store stocked with books, DVDs, and other merchandise, including Open Minds magazine. Visit OpenMinds.tv, the definitive source for UFO-related news. That's www.openminds.tv.
Open Minds Production is proud to present the 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress, coming to its new home at the Radisson Port McDowell Resort and Casino in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is the premier annual event for UFO researchers, enthusiasts, and the general public with an interest in mysterious phenomena. Come listen to expert ufologists, government officials, and respected scientists presenting information relating to UFOs, extraterrestrials, crop circles, abductions, cover-ups, and more at the largest UFO conference in the country. The 20th anniversary of the International UFO Congress takes place February 23rd through February 27th. Visit UFOCongress.com for more information, including sponsorship and vendor opportunities.
Welcome back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
All right, welcome back to Open Minds Radio. You know what? Like I said, if you go to openminds.tv, you can watch us here. You can see our studio. Perhaps some of you weren't around when we were in our studio before. So let us know what you think. I mean, usually people used to think this looked pretty cool. So let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about sound.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me now?
How everything sounds and looks so we can tweak things to make your open mind experience a phenomenal and incredible experience. Well, someone in the chat said, you know what? Well, you're talking too much nuts and bolts. Well, our last magazine issue was about abduction.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to that, I don't want to forget, was there anything special or that people didn't know about that you found in that Barahona
letter? Well, I don't know that I would. I mean, especially in the sense that apparently it's a document that most people in Brazil, for some reason or another, didn't have, because we even got an email from Jevaed, right, who is the main Brazilian ufologist, and he was all excited about it. So apparently maybe there weren't too many copies made of that document. Who knows? I think the details of the description of the case, as he tells them there, seem to me that it were, you know, basically the same story. I'm sure people will now go with the final, and, you know, skeptics probably going to look for any little contradiction between, you know, what he said in 1959 and 1967 or whatever. But, I mean, I'm very familiar with that case. I wrote the chapter in the UFO briefing document, you know, the Rockefeller report, which was we've discussed before. We have even a link in at the end of the story to, because that document is posted online. The complete UFO briefing document is available in some obscure Spanish page, even though it's in English. And so we have a link to the story as we wrote it there. So I don't know. I don't think it's so much that he says anything different, but that here you have another version, unknown, apparently mostly unknown, by the main protagonist. So that's always interesting.
Well, you can see, you know, like the whole telephone thing where over time, the story changes as it's retold each time.
Right.
So at least now you can match it up against to what Barahona says himself
See,
you know, what the true heart of the story was.
Yeah, and this is in 67, so it's like 9 years after. It's a few years, but it's not that way back later, right? So, and of course, he's dead now. So whatever this alleged confession, we'll never get to the bottom of it. I mean, unless someone finds some written document by him before he died or something. But I doubt if that exists. So we basically, we only have this secondhand. Which, as I say, I don't think this woman, this ad agency woman, or the niece are lying either. It might have been, which is, this was pointed out by Bruce McAbee, that the information they relay is so short that it might even be, a confusion over that case that he had hoax in 1954. It's possible. And in fact, even in the picture of 54, which we reproduce there, you see a woman putting two things together. So even that, even though I don't think they're spoons, but who knows. And also maybe this conversation, he was old, you know, when he told it. So whatever, it could be just some kind of honest confusion, you know, I don't think that woman is lying or anything. I'm sure she's telling the truth,
Bittencourt,
but the information is just too scant to make a conclusive, you know.
About what's going on.
Yeah, and besides, it's secondhand anyway. Mm-hmm.
So the Abduction magazine, for the people who don't have it out there, and I know that not everybody out there has it because we have a lot of listeners, and when I matched up the sales, we have some unloyal listeners who are not purchasing our magazine.
Right.
And that broke my heart.
Well, also, Alejandro, remember that in the old days, our magazine was only available in this country.
Right.
And we have the web. I'm sure you have a lot of listeners abroad. And
that's a really good point, because it was kind of pricey. Even if you're in Canada, which isn't that far, you had to pay an extra $25 in shipping or whatever. But you can get the magazine digitally now.
Right.
I don't know if I've even mentioned that on the radio show before. I'm glad you reminded me.
You leave, maybe Wen Sichao can get it, you know.
Right.
Or whoever, you know.
Wen Sichao. We got to make sure he's reading
it.
He'll
anybody in the world can go to our website, basically, right? And just pay the price and then get the electronic version of the magazine. So
one great advantage from having you as part of the Open Minds is that you have a lot of familiarity with foreign cases.
Mm-hmm.
So you were able to cover some foreign abduction cases. So let's talk a little bit about some of those cases. We'll have to leave at least, I guess, some little pieces for them to go get the magazine.
Yeah, I did the one article there. I mean, I have, of course, another big article on the history of UFOs in the UN on the same issue, but that has nothing to do with abductions, although it's an important...
We talked about that. They can listen to the other radio show.
We talked in detail about that because that was one of my first things that I ever attended when I became an ufologist. At that time, I wouldn't even have called myself an ufologist, just a journalist who became interested.
Some schmuck.
Yeah, well, just like Leslie Keene started with Comita, you know. You start with something, and then usually the subject grabs you. But the abduction article I did in this issue, which we have a tremendous amount of material on abductions. I mean, it's really, we have a significant amount of all kinds of cases and in-depth, too. We even have that memoir from Hopkins.
A piece from one of Hopkins' books.
So, but my article, basically, I went after four foreign cases because I figure it's important to let people know that abductions, even though most people are familiar with American abductions, you know, whether it's Travis Walton or Betty Hill or Whitley Strieber with Communion and so on, but it's not an exclusive American phenomenon. It certainly happens all over the world. And although in some countries we probably know very little about it because it's not reported, which used to be the case in America too. When you have not a very developed ufological culture, then maybe people can deal with only sightings. That's controversial enough, you know, to discuss medical examinations inside a craft or sometimes even sexual things.
And which we cover, of course, a famous case being Betty and Barney Hill. But for instance, when that case happened, which is held in high regard right now because it was well researched by the field, back when it happened, there were groups that wouldn't look at it.
Yeah. And also it wasn't published right away. That case happened in 61, and finally came up on the John Fuller's on the Look magazine. I think it was like 60, 64 or 66 or something like that.
Later.
So if it was a few years later. Yeah, NICAP, which was a pioneer book and the pioneer organization and everything that had to do with military and pilot cases. And, you know, they were the first ones who were, putting pressure on the government. So they were great. They did a great job on many areas, but they were terrible when it came to humanoid cases and particular abductions. They thought that that was so crazy for that time that they wouldn't touch it.
It's funny because they believed in the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Right.
They saw these things flying around. What did they think were flying them around?
Well, David Jacobs, who was a historian, you know, who later became, in fact, one of the main investigators of abduction, he had a famous line who said, well, for NICAP and those people, they wanted to deal with the objects, but not whoever was piloting the objects.
Yeah.
You know, like that, they wouldn't deal. So I think we see a similar pattern in
mm-hmm.
some countries. But it's changing because we have a global culture now. So even that is changing. In fact, we did have a case in China at a place called Phoenix Mountain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And which is kind of a crazy case in the sense that this abductee also had a sexual encounter. So that kind of shocked the Chinese ufologists, and they didn't want to deal with that too much. But nevertheless, the Chinese are so open towards this phenomenon that they invited this guy. And we have, I don't think we have a picture of that in the magazine, but I have a picture that Sun Shili, the famous Chinese ufologist, prominent ufologist in China, you know, who was the founder of the China UFO Research Organization, who had a very interesting background because he had been the interpreter for Chairman Mao Zedong, you know, the founder of China.
I heard of that guy.
Yeah, the communist leader, right? And Sun Shili speaks Spanish perfectly because he used to be the Spanish interpreter for Mao Zedong. So, and I met him at several occasions. I haven't seen him recently, but I saw him in San Marino at the International Symposium in San Marino in Italy. I saw him in New York and so on. And we could talk Spanish. And that was great.
Right.
So I was able to interview him and so on. I even did as an interpreter for him one time. So he took this guy, this abductee, this peasant, because it worked at a forestry place in some remote part of China, near this place called Mount Phoenix. And this guy gave a talk at an aeronautical symposium in China. Imagine that happening in the United States. You bring, like, let's say, Stan Romanek or someone like that, and he addresses a symposium where they're engineering, talking about space travel and space colonies or whatever. So that shows how things are different in other countries. Anyway, we have that case. We have another case, which is...
Was that in your article?
That's in my article, one of the four cases.
Oh,
and the other one, we discussed it, I remember, in your shows a while ago, because it's one of my favorites, is Wolski, the Polish case, which is the only abduction case that has its own monument.
Mm-hmm.
The Poles were so excited about
it. You know, it's
case.
Interesting we're talking about this, too, because the fairly popular sci-fi website, IO9, they just wrote a story about this,
the monument.
Case?
Oh,
and
the
Wolski case with the comic.
Right, and they quoted us, I guess. I hope so.
I don't think they did.
Oh,
actually.
Well, there's some other stuff around it, And so that's a great case. Because it was so thoroughly investigated. This was investigated in the days when Poland was still communist. Well, then sort of the waning days of Polish communism. But what's interesting is Poland became a pioneer in the Iron Curtain countries, because whether the other countries, you had to be a member of the Communist Party or whatever, in Poland, since they were Catholic and they had sort of their own culture, ufology was not a state thing. You didn't have to be associated with some Academy of Sciences or something like that. Although most of these people were scientists, but it was privatized. They did it on their own. But they thoroughly investigated this case, and it's a wonderful case, very, very well documented. And also because it happened in such a remote part of Poland that it's something that now it could never happen again. But back in 1978, here you had a guy in the border of Poland and Ukraine or something like that who never heard of UFOs, didn't know that this was a phenomenon that existed, that people report these things. He called them weird foreigners. Yeah. And he, so for him, these were...
And kind of not a typical abduction. I mean,
right.
Very strange. I know we've got an article that you had written quite some time back.
On the web, right.
On the web.
Yeah. In fact, the article on the web is it's more complete. The magazine, you know, you have to make things kind of short. And also because it was not the only article. So, and then, of course, I have the other one, which is very famous, is the Vilas Boas case from Brazil. And this happened 4 years before Betty Hill, 1957. But here, this was the first case where you really had a sexual contents. I mean, completely obvious sexual contents, which later became known in some abductions. But back then, if abductions alone were controversial, never mind, am I having sex with an alien? You know, that's
well, especially
just
because it was, of course, every man's fantasy. Or it's in the movies where the sexy alien, you know, beautiful woman comes and she doesn't say a word. So, of course, that's wonderful to have this beautiful woman.
Oh, yeah, there was no talking here. Well, not even telepathic.
And she says, you know, she just gestures and they have their experience. And people find that so hard to believe. But then we have Star Trek, and that's all James Kirk is doing, flying around space, making love to
alien
women.
But this happened long before.
Right.
So there was not so... Yeah, there was science fiction, of course. You always had in the pulp magazines of the 30s and 40s, you always had the monster taking the beautiful, you know, Earth girl. You know, that part was kind of common, but not the description of this guy as he tells it. So that case wasn't even touched for years. And it was only published after the Betty Hill and other cases have been published in America. Mm-hmm. And it was not even published in Brazil first. It was published in Flying Saucer Review. Even though the report, which was prepared by Dr. Olavo Fontes, a pioneer of Brazilian ufologists, been dead for many years, very thorough report. And he was a medical doctor as well. And had excellent connections with the army and everything else. But this had nothing to do with the military in this case. He thought the case was real. And so he took it seriously, investigated thoroughly, did a medical examination on Vilas Boas, and sent the report to APRO, because he was the representative in Brazil. Mm. APRO, you know, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, which was much more open-minded than NICAP. But even for APRO, this was a bit too much because of the sexual contents. So basically, even APRO didn't publish it. But eventually, the report by Fontes did get, I guess, copied around, and it was published, I believe, for the first time in Flying Saucer Review in England. And then it was published by Cora Lorenzen in one of her books. And so after it was published in England and in America, finally, the Brazilians said, well, you know, the cat is out of the bag, so we might as well publish it too. So then it was published in O Cruzeiro magazine, which was like Life magazine, a very famous magazine. And but I guess we won't discuss too much of the details so people will buy a magazine.
So when it comes to other countries and abductions, I mean, you hear most of that. Of course, we hear most about that here in the States. We possibly, this is a question kind of you can answer, have more people researching that and maybe taking that serious. What other countries have that you've seen seem to have a lot of abductions?
They do. But again, like in many places, because of the culture, whatever, some countries being more conservative, having, you know, more religious conservative type, like in what I'm talking, probably like Islamic countries. But even Islamic countries, Turkey, for instance, which of course is not at all a religious country, you know, it's a secular society. It's Muslims, but they're totally separated state from religion. And in Turkey, there are many abduction cases. So they definitely happen. I'm friends with, I haven't been in touch with her recently, but I've known her for many years, Marie-Thérèse de Bros. She's a French journalist. She used to write for Paris Match, which is one of the main magazines in France. Very big magazine. Like, would be like Time Magazine.
What's it called?
Paris Match.
Paris Match.
Would be like Time Magazine here, although it's got a big format. It looks more like Life, but it's extremely famous magazine. Well, she came to New York when I met her in the 90s, and because she was researching abductions. Eventually, she published a book on abductions. Mostly American cases, but I guess she went to Canada, other places as well. When she published, but this was later, her book. Originally, she published an article in this Perry Match magazine. I don't know what's the distribution, but it's huge. The magazine got hundreds, maybe thousands of letters.
Wow.
From readers.
People having experience.
From people having experience. Because the French, yeah, they love their thorough and their investigations and all that. But abductions was maybe considered too much for a lot of the UFO investigative groups in France. So that had been kind of left aside. We're talking early 90s. And so when she published this, I forgot she told me the amount. It was like 600 letters or
so
more.
So the matter could be that it is across the board worldwide.
Oh, definitely.
Very similar in numbers. As the United States, we just have more people listening,
yeah.
More people to contact
it. In Italy, they did a survey similar to what was done in America with a Roper poll.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was this professor, Corrado Malanga, who did a lot of work in Italy. And I forgot the numbers, but it was similar. There was a large number of people that, I mean, once you extrapolate the poll. Well, we also have a case in the article I wrote for the magazine of an abduction in Argentina. So there you have it, too. Of course, there are not only Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Mexico. I'm less familiar with abduction cases in Mexico because it's being less investigated. But there are
some
cases.
I know some contact cases, I guess, out there. Huh? But
contactees you have everywhere, too. And that is, in a way, it's less controversial in some respects because it gets more into, you know, metaphysical, and a lot of people like that in Latin America. So contactees have always been very popular. You had the opportunity of meeting some of them at that big symposium in Mexico City. Sixto Paz from Peru.
Sixto is very popular.
Yeah.
I mean, he always had a huge crowd.
And they fill theaters, these guys.
Yeah.
But they don't talk so much about their case. They basically talk about, they give a lot of religion in a way to people, you know, and how aliens are going to come and basically, you know, help us to develop our consciousness. And so there's like a whole metaphysical kind of New Age side of it, which a lot of people like, as opposed to, you know, they took me into the thing and they analyzed me and whatever. So, which that is, some people have more resistance to that.
And that's, I think, what's interesting. And you know, you don't see
because we didn't have room. I mean, to do, otherwise I would have to write a book.
What's a case maybe you would have liked to have gotten in there, but just there wasn't room for it?
Well, another case that originally I was going to include, but we left it out because we already had covered it on the first issue. Or was it on the second issue? I forgot. We already
had the second one.
I think the second
one,
issue, but it was a very impressive case. The Sanfretta case in Italy. Because here you had a case which was documented actually by the Italian Carabinieri, the Italian police. They did all the investigation for that case. And also this guy who was a private security guard. He belonged, Sanfretta, that was his name. He belonged to a private security police force. But they had radios and guns and all that kind of stuff, which didn't help him at all, the guns or whatever.
In one of the instances, the police, the Carabinieri, said they saw him being taken and they were shooting at the craft.
Right. Yeah, there is even a famous document from the Italian police, which we have in our files. We got from our colleague Mauricio Baiata. So it's a very good case. Another case that I was tempted to use was the Godfrey case. That comes from Great Britain. That was a policeman. A famous case of a British policeman who was driving in an area of Britain. This happened in the 70s, and he was abducted, and he was hypnotized, and the whole thing. We have cases in Russia, too. So it's all over the place. It was just a matter of selecting some and not others, you know. That's always tough when they tell you. But, I mean, there'll be other times to write other articles in the future, so we'll probably get to cover those.
Yeah, luckily we're not running out of time, so Well, on the show we are, but not
we can put them in the magazine, we could put them in the website.
Right.
We can put them on the TV shows when we get to that point. So, yeah, abductions. I was saying how the public is more open to hear from contactees sometimes than from abductees. But however, the scientists and the psychologists and those kinds of people, they lean more towards the abduction rather than the contactee, because the abduction is less metaphysical, you know, mumbo jumbo. It's more like it's like a real experience. Well, not all, but most of them, you know, most of the psychologists and psychiatrists who have really taken an open-minded look at this concluded that, yes, these experiences are occurring.
Well, I think that and let's see if you agree with me here. I think that, one, abduction cases seem to be dropping off. You don't seem to run across them as much. I mean, I used to have people approaching me 6-7 years ago that they were having these experiences. Two, I think that it was, especially while they're happening more and maybe still is, one of the best situations of giving physical evidence, because there are physiological effects on these people.
Yeah.
And one thing that's never really been done is people being able to capture and study some of these physiological effects.
There's the physiological effects, the other area.
Scoop marks, for example.
Yeah, the scoop marks. And then, of course, you have the implants.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity, we have a short article in this issue, as a matter of fact, the Ron Noel case.
Mm-hmm.
We went there with Tom Ruffin, our TV director.
Meaning the abduction art one, which is out right now.
Yeah, and the abduction issue, correct. And this, we went to the offices of this Dr. Matriciano in the L.A. area, and Roger Lear, of course, who was the best
with
known.
With Roger Lear and Jaime Maussan.
Jaime Maussan was there in Telemundo.
Hakton.
Yeah. Hackman was there. It was almost
Whitley
like a
Stryver was there.
Yeah, it was like a UFO festival.
Yeah. My next guest, and, Yvonne Smith. She's going to be on next week. She was
fact,
there, right?
So she will be able to tell you whether she's getting more patients now or less. Yeah, she's the one that did the hypnosis with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Ron, as you remember, Alejandro, we had him here in our office. He came with his wife.
Interesting story.
It's a very interesting story. Had never gotten any media attention or even an investigation. And it was only because he saw on TV one of those programs, UFO Hunters, one of those things where he saw Roger Lear, as a matter of fact, taking one of these implants and, quote, coincidence, or perhaps or more likely synchronicity. It was on the same day that he had received from his doctor an X-ray of his hand.
Right.
Because he had had a work-related accident or something, so they took an X-ray, and the doctor called him and says, did you have surgery? The guy said, no, never. It's because you seem like you have a clamp there or something.
Yeah.
So he had no idea what that was. And then he happens to see that TV show on the same day.
And
that kind of got him going. And
great. Yeah, well, I'll talk more about that. In fact, we're done here, so I'm going to talk more about next week's guest. But thanks for stepping in. Luckily, we're really fortunate to have Antonio here. We're fortunate he didn't go home. And that he's always full of incredible information. So thanks for stepping in.
You're welcome, my friend.
Next week, as we mentioned, we have Yvonne Smith. She began researching the UFO phenomena in the late 80s. And in the 90s, she became a hypnosis specialist after a couple years of an internship. She got her certification, and then she began to work with abductees to help them cope with their PTSD, which we'll talk more about. Of course, it would make sense that they've gone through a traumatic experience, that something would be going on there. So she also started CERO, the Close Encounter Resource Organization, which has monthly support groups and lectures. Actually, they're going to have Stan Romanek very soon lecturing out there. In fact, in a couple of weeks, when we're going to be in San Leandro, I'll be speaking out there. So, Yvonne Smith next week. So, check Open Minds Radio.